everyone, and welcome to After Dark with Rob and Andrew on the American Out Loud. You can find us on iHeartRadio, Spotify, Apple, Android, and just about any audio app. You can also visit AmericaOutLoud.com. Today, we're going to be talking about the news and journalism in this country, which has been having some serious credibility issues. 90% of the coverage on President Trump was negative, and we all see the softballs Joe Biden's administration has asked on a daily basis. Our guest today is a journalist, Heather Robison, who will have a lot to say on that. But first off, how are you doing so far tonight, Rob?
No, I'm doing good, Andrew. And I'm excited to be here another night on America Out Loud with Rob and Andrew after dark. I hope you guys are ready for this great show. And as Andrew mentioned, we have on the show with us tonight, Heather Robinson, who herself is a journalist. She is a real journalist, unlike the people that we see right now in the mainstream media, who, you know, are very questionable. And believe it or not, recently an article came out, not really an article, but a video came out from Project Veritas with James O'Keefe. He was questioning a CNN analyst, and this guy openly admitted that they were in cahoots to get Donald Trump to lose the election. Now, you and I have always known this, and we've talked about it. But of course, the media said, oh, it's a figment of your imagination. Don't say anything. It's not true, not true. But here we have a person who's saying this is what they did. Not only that, there was an article that was published, not the New York Times, but Time magazine, saying the exact same thing, how all these big tech companies, media conglomerates, and corporations came together, had a meeting of the minds to say, this is how we're going to stop Donald Trump. And unfortunately, they succeeded, along with a lot of other things that took place. So like you said, we have Heather Robinson on, and she's going to talk to us about her background, how she's viewing the media now, because it's in trouble. And I dare say that the freedom of the press is paramount to a democratic society, but I don't like the freedom of the press we have right now. So without further ado, Heather, how's it going?
Hey, Rob, it's going fine. How do I sound?
You sound spectacular. So give us your take on this, your background, and what are your thoughts on the media today?
Well, I saw some of the reports you did, Rob. Project Veritas revealed that some of these CNN staffers were openly, well, they didn't know they were being recorded, talking about how they were determined to get Trump out of office. And we've discussed this before. I mean, I'm surprised that it's not even higher than 90%, Aaron, you know, of the media coverage being anti-Trump. I really think that this media industrial complex, if you will, was very threatened by this man, Donald Trump, who I initially, you know, was skeptical of myself, but I'll tell you what, when I saw what an overwhelming kind of brainwashing seemed to be going on, I had to re-examine a lot of my assumptions about the man, because it just seemed to me that it was so over the top. You know, every primetime show, CNN, MSNBC, the major networks, every major newspaper in the country, late night television, you couldn't open up a magazine without seeing him demonized. And it just doesn't seem to be the function of a free press to conduct a complete character assassination of somebody. It just seemed so extreme and one note, one-sided, you know. And I think when you see that, you have to start questioning a lot, because clearly people have a deep investment in a very one-sided narrative, which,
right. And, you know, something that I've said before, like you said, you and I, we've discussed this along with Andrew, and we don't always agree on every aspect of Trump's administration, his style and the way he is, but we're able to look at it objectively and have the discussion. But what the media did, had done, and is continued to do now, is to try and just denigrate this man, attack him to, like, we just got to get rid of him altogether. Clearly, it's Trump derangement syndrome, as I said, TDS. But the objectivity is gone. And as a fellow journalist, a person who's gone to journalism school, we're taught to be objective. to leave our opinions out. So what are your thoughts on that, Heather?
Yes, I think we at least have to strive for objectivity, Rob. And I think people don't necessarily grasp the concept anymore. I mean, it may be true that there is no such thing as perfect objectivity in this world. And I think understanding that is part of a mature understanding of media and of life. But I think that when you stop striving for objectivity as a journalist and you simultaneously claim a kind of, you know, professionalism and neutrality, you're being dishonest. I mean, it's kind of like a lot of the liberal media wants to ban or to stop Fox News from existing. And without Fox News and a few conservative outlets, I think this media would be completely monolithic, completely one version of reality, one set of ideas that they are pushing. You know, they've become very ideological. And it's, it's very obvious, I think.
Right, I agree. It is obvious that the way that the other media, their approach on Fox News, wanting to shut them down completely because they don't like what they're reporting. And as they always say, it's disinformation. This is disinformation, Russia disinformation, or the right wing disinformation, when it's so completely false that they have a different take on the media or on the news cycle that's transpiring. But when you see CNN, MSNBCs, Washington Post, New York Times, that are all saying the same thing, like I said, disinformation. It's like one day they all came out and started saying disinformation. They all came out and started saying collusion. Now they're all saying racism. Everything is racism. It's like, are you serious? It is not racism. I can hate you and it not be racism. I might not like you for any number of reasons. But the way they have just like cornered or taking control of the narrative of everything that we breathe and see, it is extremely scary. And I think back when my days in journalism school, and we were taught to be objective in keeping your opinions out. And albeit it might be hard, and sometimes you might want to put your opinion in on it. But I would say, if you're going to do that, just say, this is my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's not, you know, the news. This is an opinion that I'm giving.
Right, right. Or at least this is my opinion supported with facts and logical argument.
Uh-huh.
What an opinion journalist does. And that's really what I am. I write features as well. And I do a little investigative work. But when I write columns for the New York Post or I've written columns for Jewish News Syndicate and U.S. Spectator and Daily News and others. I am acknowledging that I have a perspective and I'm seeking to support that perspective and stand up my case, kind of the way an attorney, a good attorney would. But that an opinion journalist honestly acknowledges that he or she has an opinion and B, hopefully is honest about gathering facts and making an argument without, you can't include every fact in your argument. You're going to choose facts that support your argument, but you're not going to deliberately, omit something that's undermining to your argument or that you're not going to lie. You know, you're going to select the relevant facts to support it, and you're going to acknowledge your own, I wouldn't say bias, your own perspective. You know, that's honest, because I just saw Sean Hannity was trying to explain the difference. You know, when he talked about this exposure of CNN, he said, look, I'm an opinion journalist. I'm out there with my views. I'm a conservative. You know, in other words, that you're disclosing that to the audience, then the audience can interpret what you're saying, with that awareness. But there's this position on the part of CNN, the New York Times, a lot of newspapers, they're selling, they claim to be selling some kind of perfect objectivity. And that's part of the problem, too, because a lot of people are consuming this, believing that it is very objective or attempted objectivity, but it's not.
Right. Not to mention the social media aspect as well, and they're biased as well. Heather, you've been doing columns for quite some time. What are some of the projects that have been most satisfying for you to write about?
Thanks, Andrew. Well, I cover, I'd say, several major areas. One is relationships and relations between men and women. That's been a big area in recent years. I've also written a lot about the Middle East and Israel. And lately, I've been writing about human rights and human trafficking, particularly of minors and women here in New York City, as well as over the U.S.-Mexico border and in Latin America. I'm working on a piece right now for the New York Post about that. Very, very widespread and terrible problem.
So in some of the pieces that you do write, do you find it difficult to not include your opinions? I know you said that that's what you do. You do a lot of opinion writing, but is it difficult for you when you see everyone else is couching their opinions with the truth and they're making it seem as if though what they're saying is the truth? How do you separate the two? How do you let readers know that this is an opinion? Because for the unlearned eye reader, they would just assume if Heather said it, this is the gospel.
Well, I can explain, Rob, that it's something maybe some people don't realize is that it's basically different sections of a newspaper. You know, there are the news pages, which cover breaking news and features. And then in the middle of the paper, which I typically write for, there's on the left side, the unsigned editorials, which are the editorial board of a newspaper, their official opinion that they hammer out together. And come up with the paper's official position, whether it's on which politicians to endorse, their views of breaking news and ongoing issues. And then there are the columnists, some of whom are regular columnists, and then guest columnists, opinion writers, usually on the right side of the page in the opinion section. So that's what I usually write for the New York Post. I'm a steady opinion writer for them. I write opinion for others as well. And it's a form of journalism that's its own form, really. So it's the difference between, you know, editorial writing, column writing, opinion writing, and a news report is that the writer of an opinion or an editorial, and there's a distinction between opinion pieces and editorials also, which is a little more subtle, but editorials are generally written by the newspaper staff and they kind of collaborate, and opinion pieces are written by one individual. That's what I typically do. And they are acknowledged to be the opinion of the writer. Again, if they're well done, they're not going to be just a rant. They will be a well-supported opinion based on research, observation, fact, and logic. So that's what I do. And then there's, you know, the larger issue of certain newspapers. Everybody has their leanings. The conservative papers, New York Post tends to lean conservative. You know, Wall Street Journal tends to be kind of like mainstream conservative. Online publications like Red State or something like that tend to be further right. Daily News is basically left. You know, you sort of need to maybe be aware of what the leaning is of the news source so that you can factor that into your, you know, your understanding of the news you're getting.
Right. So in today's society, with so many people giving their opinion, do you think it's dangerous?
Well, I think what's dangerous is to be maybe a uninformed consumer of news that is really opinion. In other words, the New York Times and CNN and ABC, NBC, CBS, PBS, most of the major newspapers and magazines in this country have basically become liberal opinion writing, but it's not acknowledged to be such. So I think the problem is that a lot of people are consuming this, and essentially they're not consuming it with any filter or awareness that the people writing it have an opinion, call it an agenda. And that's a problem, because they're again, whenever you when you report a news story, and I have worked as a news reporter as well, a hard news reporter, you're supposed to be striving for objectivity, not perfect neutrality. There may not be any such thing. Look, right, we're all human. So, and you know, Rob, as a journalist yourself, when you're covering something, there are 100 or 1,000 little decisions that go into every story. What do you focus on? There's the who, what, when, where, why, right? But then there are, there may be 50 who's in the story. Who do you choose to quote? Which facts are near the top? Which ones are the most relevant? Which can, and you can't put everything in the story. So whoever you are, just as a matter of practicality, you're going to have to make decisions to omit certain things. It's like, if you think of any human being as a storyteller or reporter, and nowadays we have a lot of citizen journalists, when you tell the story, and I say this to our listeners, you as an individual, let's say, you know, you have a funny story about walking down the street and slipping on a banana peel. You're going to tell your listeners what you feel is relevant, what you feel is interesting, right? You're not going to describe every pebble in the sidewalk as you walk down the street, and that a lady across the street was walking a dog in a little red sweater. Or maybe you will, you know, that's the point. It will reflect you. So we all have that. But call that a bias, okay? But if you're a news reporter, what you're supposed to be doing is trying, at least trying, to separate out an overarching agenda from your job to tell the story as objectively as you can, which means that you have a job to do. Let's say you're a crime reporter. You're supposed to get the who, what, when, where, why, without a lot of overarching opinion about why, about who's at fault, about, you know, you're supposed to be, you know, just the facts. You know, that's the old maxim, right? But if you're not really striving for objectivity, and you have in your head this idea that, you know, let's say I'm covering a demonstration, and we don't even get into which demonstration it is. Okay, let's say you just really prefer the people who are demonstrating for whatever the thing is over whoever they're demonstrating about. Then, if you have a strong opinion and agenda there, you will be maybe, and you're not so ethical, maybe you won't go out of your way to talk to someone on the other side, you know, or if you do, maybe you'll choose the quote that looks bad for the people on the other side, instead of, you know, talking to a few people and trying to get a more balanced picture. Does this make sense? It has to do with making the effort and going the extra mile to try to realize there's more than one side to most stories. That's an example of trying to strive for objectivity and not going out of your way to make one side look more sympathetic, let's say. I don't feel a lot of reporters in the liberal media today take that very seriously when it comes to covering things that they believe look better for the left, or, you know, are in sync with their ideas. They're more inclined to cover things in a way that positively showcase what they believe in and negatively showcase what they want to negatively depict, if that makes sense.
No, I think you explained that extremely well, especially the part about citizen journalists. And I think that we have so many citizen journalists out there now, not just because, well, one of the reasons is because of social media, and people can very easily jump on and give their spin to things and tell their story. News is so transactional now. When something happens, we don't have to wait as we used to 24 hours or even 10 hours. We can get it right there and then, and it's on a broad screen for everyone to see. That is good. Sometimes it can be dangerous because, as you mentioned, some people are only looking at one side and they only want to tell what they want people to know. And it's really unfortunate that you have these huge news organizations that have the resources and the manpower to put out there to cover a story and to tell the story, and they don't do it. They still come back with lopsided or one-sided views, only to find out later on that the story that they're telling has so many different parts and there's so many different intricacies. Even when they're videotaping, they will come out with the narrative and everyone will buy into that narrative thinking, well, this is what happened. But then when you see it again in a different light, we're like, wow, what we thought we knew, we didn't know. And I think it's to our detriment, and it's really unfortunate that these news organizations have done this. And if you're not an educated reader or a consumer of news of more than just one source, you won't know this. Now, I don't watch CNN. I don't watch MSNBC. I was exclusively Fox. Now, as a journalist, I know that I need to watch all of these news stations in order to come up with an informed decision or to see who's saying what. So mm-hmm. I've since gone and I'm like, okay, I'll watch a little Newsmax and then I'll read different stories online, you know, different news sources. I might find a reporter. I'm like, okay, this person isn't being biased. CNN, MSNBC, I don't care for them. What they're saying, I think is too much spin. And it's really unfortunate. And something else you said about the objectivity of being an independent journalist, approaching the subject matter and saying, this is what I'm going to report on. I want to be truthful and I want to be accurate. Unfortunately, we have journalists who either, or they say that they're journalists, they've never gone to journalism school. And it's not to say that you have to, because it is a craft. But we have individuals who were talking heads at one point in a prior administration, and they're now thrown on TV because of their access to the prior administration. And people assume and think, and rightfully so, well, if we bring them on camera, they will get us access to people that we want to talk to. And then they start to pontificate their opinions about the news, and people will assume, well, they got this person there, so obviously they know. But as we see now to this date, a lot of that is just made up, like the whole Russia collusion, when we were told that there is something there, and we were constantly told that by everyone in the news, mm-hmm. as opposed to looking at it and seeing that there's not anything there. And even look at the Hunter Biden story, we were told there's nothing there, and there was something there.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah, anyone with eyes can see how biased CNN, New York Times, and most mainstream media outlets are. How much of a factor is these young journalism students being indoctrinated when they go to college affecting their job performance, you think, Heather, when they do start writing for these big mainstream media publications?
Must be a lot, Andrew. It's been a while since I was in journalism school, but I had professors of journalism ethics. I remember one, Roger Simpkins, great professor at the University of Washington, happened to be a political liberal himself. But as I remember him, you know, he took this very seriously and it was a great course. And he talked a lot about this difference between objectivity and neutrality, that, you know, perhaps it's not incumbent upon a journalist to be neutral. You know, we all have our views, you know, but it's different to say to be as objective as you can, to strive for objectivity was the phrase he used, because he knew that we were all human and we were all subject to bias, to opinion. And, you know, sometimes you want some of that. You don't have to be a tabula rasa, right? And I remember the example he gave was, you know, when the American press went to the concentration camps, you know, to cover the aftermath in WW2. It was not incumbent upon them to be perfectly objective. As a human being, they had emotions, and something so extreme, you know, you can't and wouldn't want to be completely neutral and have no feeling. But even in an extreme situation, you can strive for objectivity. And what does that mean? It means you try to set aside your emotions for a while. You try to report the facts. You don't deliberately distort facts or lie to make your point. And you still have to describe what you see without a lot of heightened emotion and even if it's a very emotional subject. Now, that doesn't mean you have to go to take it to an extreme that's absurd and start trying to, you know, be sympathetic to the Nazis, okay? But it does mean that you stick as closely as you can to the facts that you're reporting, and you don't layer it with a heavy layer of your own emotional reactions and a preconceived idea of what you want your reader to take away. So I, you know, as we were talking, I wrote down two things. I think there are really two issues. I think that one part of the problem is that these papers and broadcast outlets, I think the New York Times historically is among the worst offenders because they claim, they call themselves, you know, they like to have, they have those ads where they say, we really surround the story. I don't know if you guys remember that, but there were ads some years ago where they would show these different people having their little cup of coffee with the New York Times and la-di-da and rhapsodizing about the brilliance of the New York Times. And you know, each person on the ad would say, what I love about the New York Times is the way they don't just tell you the story. They
I remember that.
The story. Like they are going above and beyond. They are striving to give you not just the facts as, you know, right there, but to think about what came before, what came after, what, you know, other possible possibilities, which is the exact opposite, in my opinion, of what they do. I think that they are, you know, they maybe are accurate when it comes to numbers and this and that for the most part. It's not that they're liars or that they're, you know, inaccurate or sloppy, but they don't strive to really consider, you know, within reason from other points of view, you know, why some, just to give an example, why somebody might have voted for Donald Trump who's not racist, you know, why, you know, half the country did. I mean, it seems like a reasonable, non-far-fetched journalistic exercise to say, hey, you know, let's really go out and talk to people, you know, in the cities, in small town America, you know, in some poor areas and some white areas. Let's talk to some Black conservatives, some Hispanic conservatives. Let's just in a respectful way, let's listen a little bit and not make assumptions. I mean, how many of those stories did they do? You know, given that they claim to surround the story and make a good effort to consider other views and not have a knee-jerk kind of coverage, you would think that would be a pretty basic type of story for them to have done, given that this, the country is roughly divided and half the people in the country see things a certain way, but they generally did not do that, you know, and they, but they, so part of the problem is they don't strive. The other part is their arrogance. They compliment themselves and tell everybody that they do strive to surround the story and look at things from other points of view. So, you know, if either of those things was less true, if either they didn't claim, you know, to strive for objectivity or they actually did strive for objectivity, you know what I mean? It would be all right, but they neither admit that they don't strive, nor do they in any way. I mean, they claim they do this, something which they generally don't do. And people, you know, buy it as the gospel. So you got, you know, half the country inculcated with really a very propagandistic form of journalism.
You know, I really don't think that they strive to be objective in some cases. I mean, CNN, MSNBC, the journalists that are there, they're not even journalists, they're pundits. I don't think they strive. I think they have the intent of going out and deceiving, spinning the story, the narrative, the way they want to spin it. Because you, look at the Washington Post, look at the Times, they've had to reprint stories in the New York Times. It's just, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, I don't know how much it's conscious. I think it's more that most of the people who work for these outlets went to sort of the same schools and reinforced each other and went to the same parties and have the same sorts of hobbies and consume a lot of other media that's reinforcing the same sorts of ideas and lens. You know, and maybe you're right. Maybe, and we saw in this report of Project Veritas, people sitting there and just saying, yeah, we wanted Trump out. We pushed everything we could. You know, I'm paraphrasing. But so maybe you're right, Rob. Maybe it is much more conscious and intentional. I tend to think of it more as just people who are so, they're just sheltered and they're in an echo chamber and they are very invested in this worldview. And I think of it as their religion, honestly, I think, which is a whole other subject, but we're living in a time that's, you know, every time has its gods, its, and, you know, I don't mean to sound overly like poetic or flowery, but I think the gods of our time in some ways are celebrities. And for many people, politics, left-wing politics has replaced the role of religion, you know, in the soul as like an ordering principle, a community sense of, you know, connection with others, a guide to morality and to being a good person and believing oneself as a good person. I think most people need this, need some structure, some community, some rule book. And because we're living in a time that is godless to in many people's minds, science has replaced God for many people. And, you know, along with that, left-wing politics has become a religion. And I think that's part of why people get wild on the subject, you know, of something like Donald Trump. He's like their Satan.
And if indeed it has, Heather. And hold that thought, because we will be right back. You are listening to After Dark with Rob and Andrew on the iHeartRadio Network, Spotify, or just about any audio app. Check out the newly revamped website, AmericaOutloud.com, for tons of great articles and podcast content. We'll be right back with more on cancel culture, mainstream media, and much more with our guest, Heather Robinson.
Incredible years, and we're just getting started. Well, they say time flies when you're having fun. Well, it also flies by when you're on a mission of love. Love of country, that is. Well, our goal is to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. You can listen in on our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. AmericaOutloud.com. It's a fight for the soul of humanity.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount, or call 844-869-9958.
And we're back. After Dark with Rob and Andrew on America Out Loud. You can hear us on iHeartRadio or on Apple iTunes. We're back with Heather Robinson, a journalist who's talking to us about the state of journalism today and where she sees things are going, the good, the bad, the ugly. And I got to admit, as we were saying in a previous conversation, that things do seem rather bleak. It's like every conversation that we have now, that we've had on the network, seems rather bleak. And like there's no hope. And you would think that of all places that we would be able to sit down and tune in to some positive news from the local news stations. But if you're not watching or listening to After Dark with Rob and Andrew, you're not going to get that complete, succinct analysis that you need. Unvarnished, unbiased, we're just going to give it to you. Now, I will admit that I love Donald Trump. liked his policies. Yes, he's up in your face. Yes, he was boisterous. Yes, he was arrogant. Yes, some people say he was a bully and he didn't talk like a politician. He's a businessman. But what I liked about him is that he got the job done. Unfortunately, many on the left stream media, didn't like that. They wanted someone who was cookie cutter. They wanted someone who would just tell them any and everything. And they could say, oh, wow, the world is so beautiful. And it's not. You look at how when Joe Biden came into office, or even when he was running, the questions that they asked him, oh, what type of ice cream do you have? And do you like vanilla or do you like chocolate? And then doing one of the press conferences whereby he was actually engaging, I don't want to say journalists, but the so-called reporters, and he had like a list of reporters to call, they were saying, oh, well, Joe, we got to ask you this. You are so, do you think that the migrants are coming here or illegal aliens are coming here because you're so nice and you're this? Like, what type of question is that? Heather, what do you say?
Yes, that was ridiculous. And I personally am very upset about that because I think what he did there with this ridiculousness about I'm a nice guy and was very irresponsible. It's a very complex set of issues involving illegal immigration and the border. But one thing I would remind our listeners is, listen, I was critical of a lot of what Obama did, President Obama. But you can look back to Obama's presidency in 2014. He said, people of Central America, my message to you is do not send your children here. We will have to send them back. And worse, many of them will not make it. Please don't do this. I mean, for everything that Obama did that was wrong, he had the sense to at least be clear in that messaging. I mean, everybody knows if God forbid a child is found, the United States of America will be as humane as possible as we should. But the point is to broadcast to people that because I'm a nice guy, we'll take your children is a piece of what I believe is terribly, terribly wrong about what we're seeing now. Look, there are many, many causes and hardship and suffering in Latin America, and there are many factors driving this. But one of those factors, I believe, based on interviews, including with people in Mexico who are on the ground trying to help children, is that a lot of people in these very poor countries, which are now beleaguered by cartels and traffickers and crime that's out of control. It's very, very sad. These are very frightened and poor people who are getting a message that America is the golden land and that their children have a chance here. But the scary thing is that their children are becoming prey on the way for human traffickers, for cartels. A lot of them aren't going to make it. And Obama said it. I have to give him credit. He laid it out very clearly and he was right. And one of the things I wrote in the piece I wrote this week is Joe Biden needs to go back and listen to what Obama said.
He needs to go back, but we know that Joe Biden is challenged. So I personally think he's challenged.
As you know, I was interested in the whole Bachelor situation because I felt with the show, The Bachelor, that what happened there was, it was quite something. You had a couple young people who presumably the whole premise of the show is that they're relating to each other as individuals and getting an opportunity to love each other. And then you had this whole brouhaha led by, as far as I can tell, some extreme leftists online and led by a woman who looked like a white woman. She didn't even look like, a woman of color, who posted all this stuff about this young woman, Rachel Percano. And, what hit me about that is, if this whole show is supposed to be about people as individuals making choices, why was that choice taken away from this man, Matt, the Bachelor? I mean, to me, he looked like a victim of the Stockholm Syndrome. I know I shared with you when he was on the last show. So anyway, I just think that there's a lot of ganging up And this whole cancel culture thing, yes, I think it's a kind of a witch hunt. I think it's like tyranny of the emotions. Whoever is most hurt and vitriolic is the most given license to mete out ostracism, and everybody piles on. I think it's pretty gross, and I don't think it really has anything to do with true sensitivity. I really don't. I don't think it's going to genuinely combat real racism. I'm very skeptical that it will, because I think that racism, you know, tends to be based on ignorance and people not knowing each other. And I don't think that the spirit of this or the reality of it is encouraging people to build bridges. People who might be racist, you know, I don't think that they will learn to love and appreciate people who are different than them, you know, through this means. I think that love and friendship are a lot stronger and more transformative than shaming. So I'm very skeptical of all that.
Right. I mean, even look at the situation with the talk and Sharon Osbourne and her co-host Sheryl Underwood and the whole racist thing and, you know, the backwards and forward. It seems as if though everything in today's society is centered around racism. Who's a racist? Who isn't a racist? I mentioned Prince Harry and his wife and them saying that members of the royal family, they're racist. And now he's got to go to his grandfather's funeral. I mean, all this stuff, and it just keeps mushrooming and mushrooming. If you want to get someone's attention, say racist, racism, you call those words out and people will stop and listen. Yes,
Heather, go ahead. It's very deep in the culture. Yes, very, very deep, very pounded in.
And it makes you wonder how did we get here?
Mm-hmm.
It's I woke up one morning and everything is about racism. And if I don't see it, me as a Black man, I'm made to feel guilty that I don't see this person as a racist. Something that they did is about racism, or if this didn't happen to me, it's because of racism. If I didn't get a job, it's because of my color. If someone looks at me the wrong way, it's because they don't like my Black skin. Or if I'm at a store and if I'm being followed by the security guard, it's because he's racist. If I get stopped by the police, it's because they're racist. Even if the police is Black, everything has to do with racism. And pop culture tells us this. If I'm listening to the wrong music, it's because I'm a racist. Or they're not singing the right lyrics, it's because they're a racist. Everyone is a racist. When will it stop? How did we let pop culture, you know, this beat into pop culture, then it goes into the news, and it's like we are consumed by it.
Yes, yes, all in the name of defeating it.
Right, in the name of defeating it. How can you defeat it if you keep saying everything is about racism? You can't.
Yeah, you know, there's forgive me for going afield a little, but there's a system of thought, which I always found interesting, called the science of mind. And I don't know that I buy it 100%, but I think it's interesting. Some of its principles are taken from Norman Vincent Peale, who was the Power of Positive Thinking founder. He was a minister. And one of the things he said was that which you give your attention to will increase. And it's a principle of what he preached, that when you give something attention, even if it's negative attention, even if it's to condemn it, you are giving it power, that what you focus on and think about and talk about and put your energies toward will increase in the world. And it's just an interesting thing to consider. And I think about it sometimes. You know, on the other hand, I guess if something really is a malevolent force, you have to fight it sometimes. But I guess his idea was that a lot of things you can resist by ignoring or by turning your attention elsewhere and focusing on the positive. You know, he was a big believer in the power of positive thinking. And in other words, if a bully is bothering you, and, you know, I think there's some truth to this. You know, if you spend all your time reacting and hyper-reacting and you know, crying or fighting or yelling or talking and thinking and fearing and obsessing about this bully, you're giving him a lot more power than if you're able to just, you know, focus on, you know, your talents, your goals, walk on by, you know, and believe in yourself. And I think that with a lot of these problems, you know, I think people are being encouraged to really focus on and think about and talk about and obsess about the negative, you know, whether it's sexism, racism, this or that. And look, I mean, sometimes you do have to deal with things. You can't bury your head in the sand if, God forbid, somebody's attacking you physically or, you know, I mean, I'm not suggesting we just ignore, you know, violence or, you know, racism or anti-Semitism. You know, when it's extreme, you have to stand up. But I think a lot of these things, it just sort of like, you know, talking about it constantly and thinking about it and seeing it everywhere, I actually think in a way is giving power to it that it doesn't deserve.
Possibly. What you're saying is possibly true. But again, here we are in the country talking about it nonstop. You would have thought, or we were told, that with the election of the first Black president, Barack Obama, that everything was beautiful and that it was a new day and we were going to move forward. But level-minded people, objective people, if you were to look back at his time in office, it seemed as if though things got worse. He had two Black attorney generals and neither one of them chose to tackle the issue of the criminal justice system. President Trump did, although he's not given credit. But Barack Obama, Black president, two Black attorney generals, and absolutely nothing. And you look at the crimes that took place under Barack Obama, crimes against Black people. You look at, and when I say crime against Black people, I just want to make certain that people understand. I'm not saying that what happened was right. I'm just saying that the perceived of the crimes that were committed, that's what I should say, offenses against Black people by the police, only to find out that Barack Obama's own Justice Department and Civil Rights Division came back and said, hey, these police acted accordingly. And then you look at the crimes against police officers during his time in office. And never once did he come out and condemn it. It was like that it happened and he moved on. And to this day, right now, as of 2021, I saw somewhere statistics that 100 police officers have lost their lives in the line of duty. Mm-hmm. Now, that's a staggering number. And it's quiet as it's kept. And who's standing up for them? Who's saying that they lost their life because of racism, that someone didn't like a police officer? And some of these police officers that lost their lives, they were Black, they were Hispanic, they were Chinese, they were people of color.
Yes. That's one of the things I don't understand about this. You know, I have to say, I mean, I get it. I do get it, Rob. I'm trying to, and I, you know, some of this has been an eye opener for me. What happened to George Floyd? It was horrible to see. I think that there are things that white America needed to see perhaps to get certain things. None of us can understand what it is to be in someone else's shoes ever, really. But, you know, we all have to try, I think. But the part that I don't understand, though, is if we are trying to understand that people shouldn't have to be afraid, you know, to just walk down the street, law-abiding people, Black citizens of this country should not have to be afraid that you live in a police state, God forbid, you know. But you know what? Really, none of us should have to be afraid. You know, a Black police officer, any police officer, shouldn't have to be terrified to go to work, shouldn't be demonized and vilified. I mean, you know, this, I guess I just feel like what we need is empathy all around. You know, I get it that, you know, white America needs to learn some things, police need to reform some things, but, you know, other people also had a horrible, nightmarish summer. Police officers who were killed, who were injured, who were spat on, who were shoved. What about the little kids who were caught in the crossfire of a situation where the police were standing down and these terrible neighborhoods where's the compassion for them? And I ask it sincerely, not as a, you know, to be contentious, because my heart is broken over everything, the suffering, George Floyd's suffering, but also the suffering of the children and the lack of humanity of some of these protesters who are overgeneralizing, stereotyping, demonizing the police, many of whom are minorities themselves. You know, how can, to me, this is just, you know, Martin Luther King, rest his soul, you know, would be turning in his grave to see this. This is not compassion. You know, this is very one-sided. You know, granted, I understand there's anger, you know, but there also has to be a real dialogue if it's going to be real, if it's going to progress us, I think.
Right. Well, one of the things I want to say that you touched on as far as, you know, Black people not being afraid to walk down the streets, I don't think it as much as Black people being afraid. I think the media has created the perception that Black people are afraid. And if a Black person were to tell you, well, I'm afraid to walk the streets, then I would pose to them, what streets are you walking down? Because if you're walking down the streets of your own neighborhood, then you're afraid of your own Black neighbor. And in many of the cities like Chicago, Watts in LA and in Detroit and in Baltimore, a lot of these streets, the bad streets, and in Brooklyn or the Bronx, are streets where predominantly minorities live. So when they say that they're afraid, I'm like, no, are you generalizing? You're saying that you're afraid because the media is saying that you should be afraid, because in those neighborhoods are Black people and they're committing the crimes against other Black people. That being said, they say, well, they're the police that are here. Well, the police are only there when you call the police to come to resolve an issue. You look at the situation in Wisconsin when the police was called with Jacob Blake. Look at the situation in Atlanta when the police was called by a Wendy staffer, happened to be Black, when the man fell asleep in his car. Look at the situation now with Devontae Wright. Look at the neighborhood he was in. Okay, the police were out. They saw him and they stopped him. Now my question becomes, okay, you have to obey the law. Stop means to stop. They had you in your handcuffs, or in their handcuffs, and you get in the car and you try to take off. Now, it's unfortunate that this officer pulled out her gun as opposed to her taser. My heart goes out to both of the families, because this young man is dead. The family's life will be forever changed. Now we have the police officer. Her name was Kim Potter, a 26-year veteran. Her life forever changed. Now, you can't make me believe that she went out there purposefully to shoot this man. It was a mistake. From what I see, it was a mistake. Go ahead, Andrew, you were about to say.
Yeah, I was going to say, people are so quick to rush to judgment in this latest case. I mean, what is more likely, that she made a mistake and grabbed her gun instead of her taser, or that she was so racist that she would risk her job and everything in her about her life that as she knows it, to shoot a Black man? I mean, it just seems pretty obvious. It was a clear mistake for her. And as you said, I really feel for her. And obviously we feel for the young man that got shot as well. He shouldn't have been resisting arrest, but very sad situation.
It's an extremely sad situation, but the way this just goes back to us talking about the media, the way the media has shaped this up as to it's about race and they hated him. And something else I got to say also, this young man, mixed, Black, white. Why can't we just say that he's a white man? Why do we have to say he's a Black man? Well, some would say, well, because if you're Black, you have any Black, they're going to say that you're a Black man. It's the way society perceives you. Who is society that's making this perception? I would say it is a liberal side, because they're so into identity politics. But that's another discussion that we'll have. But that's just food for thought. I want people to let that marinate in their minds. But again, the way the media has shaped these stories up as to this police officer, she shot him and she did this. From what I see, it was a mistake. Okay, let's fast forward. Let's look at the other situation of the Army guy, the lieutenant in the Army who was pulled over. He said that he kept driving because he wanted to get to a well-lit area. No, the media has taken this and they've run with it. They've said, oh my God, here's another black man. He's being mistreated. Now, they didn't bother to say that the arresting officer, one of the guys, was a Hispanic man. Now, with the other situation, Devante, they said it was a white person. The officer was white. Whereas with the Army lieutenant, they're just saying, oh, the police. Why? Why now are they not giving the race? They're not being objective. And that's extremely scary when you have these situations that are taking place. Now, my opinion, and again, this is my opinion on the situation that took place in Virginia, that to me, this military guy, it seemed as if though this was all staged, that he knew what he was doing. I don't care who you are. If you're in the Army, it doesn't matter. If you're the president of the United States, when the police says to stop, get out of the car, you stop and you get out of the car. Too many times, minorities feel as if though we don't have to listen to the police. Well, you've heard the stories as to the tragic incidents. Why wouldn't you stop and get out? That being said, there have been whites also that have refused to get out and they've lost their lives, but we don't know about them. Why don't we know about them? Because it's not part of the narrative, again, that the journalists, the media wants to spin. They have to spin the scary story that police officers are out to kill black people. So I started out by saying, when they say, I'm afraid to walk down the streets, what streets are you afraid to walk down? The streets in your own neighborhood? Yes, we should all be aware that racism exists. Yes, we should all want the law to apply to all of us. But the way the media is spinning this and making it seem as if though black people are terrified, they're afraid that the police is out to get them, to me is a false narrative, because I don't feel frightened or afraid. I do feel frightened and afraid that the media is coming out with these stories that are completely false. When you look at the statistics, when you look at the numbers, blacks make up 13% of the population. Proportionately, the amount of crime that is committed in the black community is way up there, and it shouldn't be that way. But overall, a majority of the crime is committed by non-whites. But so when you're looking at this and you're like, you know, this, the numbers just don't jive. And they don't jive is because the media is not being fair when they're reporting the information.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Rob. And thank you so much to our guest tonight, Heather Robinson, for joining us. We enjoyed having her on tonight. And thank you to everyone who joined us tonight on After Dark with Rob and Andrew on America Out Loud, available on iHeartRadio, Spotify, and most audio apps. Check out all the great shows streaming all day and every day. Also, check out the newly revamped website, AmericaOutLoud.com, which just celebrated its 5-year anniversary. We will see you guys next time, and remember to stand for something or you will fall for nothing.